Welcome to How I Raised It, the podcast that goes behind the scenes with entrepreneurs who've raised capital. We uncover the tips, tricks, and techniques they use to get investors to write a check. Strap in and turn it up.
Hi, welcome to another episode of How I Raised It, produced by Foundersuite.com. Today I have Maggie Louie of DevCon Detect coming to us from Memphis. How's your day going, Maggie?
It's going great. Thank you for having me.
Yes, awesome. So what is DevCon Detect? Cool name.
Thanks. We're a cybersecurity company, software. We specifically hunt for ad fraud and money laundering in the online advertising space.
Interesting. So go into a little more detail. Who's the customer? Who's using this? And how is it actually detecting money laundering in online advertising?
Yeah, so publishers are our key customers. So companies like Berkshire Hathaway, EW Scripps, or McClatchy, any big media company needs tools like this. And what it's doing is searching for tags or accounts attached to their site that's monetizing it that doesn't belong to them, and making sure that no one is slipped in tags that are siphoning off revenue. And, you know, so the industry typically is talking about bot traffic, and that's something fairly well established. But behind that, you know, bots don't make money on their own. You have to still have a delivery methodology to get the money from, you know, whatever site you're hitting with bots. Bots just drive up the traffic, you know, invalid traffic, but you still need a catalyst to get the money from point A to point B. And so that's the part that we specialize in, is how is the money getting to where it's going and who is it getting to?
So I know next to nothing about this space, but let me see if I understand. So in the person or entity you're trying to prevent is me putting up a website, putting on Google Ads or some sort of ads on that website, and then using bot to drive traffic, clicking on that, and therefore kind of artificially getting clicks to that. Is that correct? Something like that?
That's sort of a piece of it, but beyond that, there's a scam where a hacker can deploy tags, a tag attack, across, call it 1,000, 2,000 websites that are legitimate websites producing legitimate traffic, and do this in a discrete section. Let's say they decide to hijack the obit section of 1,000 websites, and they sneak in their tags, they take them over, and then they slam those discrete sections with bot traffic and then take the tags back out. So it's a get in, hijack a section, and hit this legitimate site with bots, and then slip back out. So it's a little bit different than a spoof site, which is completely, mm-hmm. you know, illegitimate.
Okay, interesting. And how did you come up with this idea? What were you doing before this?
So I came from digital media. I worked at EW Scripps for the digital product team, developing digital products, and working very closely with ad tech and how we're going to monetize these consumer digital products, and did the same at Los Angeles Times, at Morse Communications, which is closer to home, I think, and American Public Media. And so I have a deep expertise within digital publisher products specifically, but also ad tech. So I started the company after I caught a hacker who had done this to a company he was working for as an internal job. We calculated roughly $921,000 over the course of 8 months he was able to steal from the publisher. And that's how we really identified this scam with the hitting that site with bots, because the publisher's like, well, how did he steal that much? Because we don't make that much on a good day. And that's what we discovered, the invalid traffic and how he was, you know, bombarding those discrete sections to drive up without being detected also.
Can you explain it in a really dumbed down way for me? Like, you've got a legitimate site, let's use that obituary pages, putting in this hacker is putting in tags, and how is he actually extracting money from this? I'm not sure I quite follow that.
Yeah, so the way that the ecosystem works is, you know, the tags, the ads that you see on a website, let's call it LA Times. Let's say you go to the Obit section and you're going to see ads, you're going to see leaderboards, cubes, you're going to see 728 by 90, a lot of standard units. Those are not just image files. Those are generated by JavaScript. And those have a couple different components to them. One is the visual element that you're seeing. Two is an analytics element that's telling the ad buyer who's putting the ad on the site how many looks it's gotten. Yeah. And then the third is an account number. And think of that like a bank account. And that's going to tell the advertiser who to send the money to. And so what's happening is that you could go in and hot swap those, programmatically hot swap those numbers and replace them with your own account and steal the revenue.
Okay.
That's just one exploit. That's one of many, many exploits, but that's a very common one. Another exploit that you can generate revenue in is by embedding a pop-up ad or some other ad injector within a legitimate creative. So you take a Dell ad, we've actually found one of these recently, mm-hmm. and you pack it with the malicious code. It flights it, even if you click on the ad, goes to Dell, website where it's supposed to, but inside this, what's happening is it's deploying another program that's encrypted, and when that launches, then now it's downloaded a pop-up ad, usually in a mobile environment, which will redirect the user to something like a Walmart pop-up ad. You've probably seen one of these, or an Amazon, you've won a free, yada yada.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, and this is just a couple of examples. There's literally thousands of different exploits going around the
I'm sure the challenge is keeping up with all the new, every new scam, right? I mean, that's got to be pretty daunting.
Yeah, our tech is really built around not trying to predict just one exploit. It's about the patterns.
Okay.
And it's about, so we're using AI, but we're also using qualitative comparative analysis, which is more heuristics based. Because there is a criminal behavior you can observe here in a pattern that you can put against that along with the data sets and some of the unique identifiers that we're working in our logic.
Yeah. Very interesting. I'm sure you've got a bright, booming market ahead of you, which is always good. So let's talk about raising money. How much have you guys raised so far and in how many tranches or rounds?
So we've only done one round of funding. It's a seed round, and we raised 1.45. Mm-hmm. We closed that in the last few months, and mostly VC led. And we also had a handful of angels. One specifically, Golden Seeds, which is one of the largest investors of women in tech.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, I think I mentioned Engage. We're here at their program in Atlanta right now. We're opening offices here to be close to their cyber base. And then we're also splitting time between here and London. As I mentioned, we're doing the Barclays Techstar program in London as well.
Very interesting. Sounds you've been scrappy and creative. Who led the round? Who was the VC that led?
New Fund. They're Paris-based, but also San Francisco.
New Fund. Okay. That's an interesting name. Cool. So they led it. And then Golden Seeds, is that like an angel group that you pitched or what's their format?
Well, and there were a couple of other leads too. Innova Memphis was second lead, and Los Olos, another VC group out of Florida. So Golden Seeds and also Jump Fund, who's another group that's associated with them, they really are specific to looking for women to invest in. So we're really proud. They make very few investments every year. So we're very excited to have them get behind the company. We're more than 60% female owned.
Okay.
So that was,
Yeah, interesting. And what was your process in raising this round? Like, you've got a pretty interesting mix of folks in a fairly small round. Like GAN Ventures, is that the Global Accelerator Network venture arm?
It is, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yep. Great guys.
Yeah. How did you put together such a unique assortment of investors? What was your process?
Someone on the board of our advisors, Eric Matthews, introduced us to GAN as well as New Fund. And he runs an accelerator out of Memphis, Startco, which is a really great little more early stage company, accelerator in Memphis. And but really great. And he's I've known him for years, great guy. And he's sits on our board of advisors. And when he heard what we were doing, you know, he did a lot of outreach for us to kind of get some intros going. And we'd already had some customer traction and revenue. So I think that helped us significantly. But also just having people willing, you know, who really were aligned with what our values were, you know, and at our core, you know, we all share the belief that people who are non-technical need more resources to protect, you know, across various industries,
mm-hmm.
Where, you know, where, especially publishing, journalism, you know, free press, very important to all the people in our group. We all come from that industry, usually on the digital side. But being able to align ourselves with some other investors who, you know, similarly wanted to see more cyber, you know, security companies coming up and in different niche verticals that weren't necessarily getting the support they needed.
Okay, interesting. So did you go through Startco? I mean, it sounds like you've been in three different accelerators. Is that correct? Kind of working the accelerator circuit?
No, not exactly. We started to, but it became pretty clear pretty quickly we were a little too late stage and we had customers and we just weren't able to, you know, to that didn't quite work out for us just because of the stage we were at. Great people, valuable program. But that's what, you know, made us, we still needed support. We still needed some development personally, as well as understanding of scale and how to build teams. And so we looked for a little bit more advanced programs that were, you know, in line with what we needed. And the reason that we did Engage and Techstars in London really had to do with the very different focuses. So our sales and marketing and customer success folks spent a lot of time here in Atlanta doing the Engage program. And there's a lot of corporate LPs connected, you know, one of which is Cox and it's a media company. So it's great for us to get, you know, the access to the mentors within, you know, that piece of it. And then in Techstars, Barclay, we're really getting access to a lot of banks where we can do some research around fraud through mm-hmm. their IT and InfoSec folks, a lot of technical, you know, support and teams, AWS, you know, there's just a ton of folks that work with Techstars that are on the more technical side. So it's really about real time getting to very different teams, the kind of very specific development that we needed.
How many people are you on the team? It's amazing that such a small company is in two different accelerators in three different locations. Yeah.
So there's six full-time, six part-time, and we're hiring two more. And we're growing fast, you know. But yeah, I spend a lot of time on a plane. I'm not going to lie. I spend a lot of time on planes, as does Josh Summit, my CTO. We both go back and forth quite a bit.
Interesting. So what advice would you have for kind of making the most of all of these accelerator programs? It's interesting how a lot of startups are kind of leveraging accelerator programs to achieve XYZ goal. How are you? What advice would you have for that?
My advice really would be to look at it as an investment and know that, you know, you're giving some equity away and you need to get value out of it in return.
Mm-hmm.
And from my perspective, the access to customers that, you know, have some kind of investment, if it's the LPs, whoever the, you know, sponsors are of the accelerator that you're considering, making sure you can get some test business going that's paid. With some good customers is really important because you get a big grace too. You know, you're building your platform, things will go wrong at some point. And if you're working through an accelerator with some strategic partners that are paying you, you're going to be able to book some revenue, but also fall down without it being the end of the world. And this is going to be a company that's invested not only in you, but also within the accelerator. So they're really going to want to help you succeed and give you good feedback and real feedback. And that was kind of key for us with the programs that we chose. And then also the mentoring, looking through and making sure that the quality of mentors and the access you're going to get to them
mm-hmm.
is worth it. Because you know, when you get that funding, you're going to realize suddenly, like, oh man, I don't know how to, I don't know a ton of things. Like, you know, what's a 409A? You know, like there's stuff that comes up, and you really need a whole arsenal of really smart people in different areas that can help advise you and just get you a framework going. And, you know, it's, you don't necessarily have the money to hire people to do that stuff. So your mentor network is everything.
It's a kind of a costly way to go about it, though. I mean, you're giving 6% here, 6%. I don't know if each one is taking their standard 6%, but you know, it's a decent amount of equity for the mentor relationship. Did you?
Well, I would say don't be afraid to negotiate. That's, you know, and if it's not, you know, if you don't feel the values there, I mean, put a dollar amount to it. You know, we did our raise and looking at what would be an equivalent within, you know, the what it would be in dollars. To me, that was the bottom line, is here's what I can do based on what our round was and what our evaluation is for the round. And really, you got to remember too, with people like Engage and ATDC and Techstars, these networks are these aren't a one and done. These are so far reaching and at such high levels. I mean, I just got to have dinner last night with you know, the chairman of Invesco, you know, and talk to someone who runs a $1 trillion fund, you know, and have him offer to give me some mentoring on the side, you know. So the opportunities are what you make of it. You have to be willing to go in and really crush it. And if you're just going to go in and, you know, kind of make a few contacts here and there, it's not worth it.
Yeah.
But if you, you know, if you're going to go in and come prepared with a list of 100 customers you want and ask people, open up your, you know, Rolodex, give me your LinkedIn contacts and give me introductions and really scrap and make the most of it, then you'll definitely get the value out of it, in my opinion.
I like that approach. Come in. I mean, that's very specific and actionable. Come in with a list of 100 customers you want and work those networks to get the list. That makes a lot of sense. Tell me about the Engage ATDC program. What's that? Is it a traditional accelerator program or is it something unique?
No, it's pretty unique. So they're two separate things, but they're both in the same building. So the ATDC building is at 75 Fifth Street, and there's a lot of support from the city for this ATDC program. We're in the signature company program, and they have a lot of Atlanta companies. They don't take any equity, so there's that. Mm. But they bring a lot of customer pipeline, talent development from Georgia Tech. They bring a lot of they all have EIRs. That's entrepreneurs in residence who they'll pair you with somebody within your industry that will really help you get, you know, injected into the city and into the industry at levels. You know, for us, it's like, okay, we need an intro into Yahoo, Google, Facebook, and you know, these are big institutions. So you really need people who have some kind of street cred that will understand what you do and understand why it's worth it for them to open up that contact for you. And then Engage is it's a VC fund, and they, I think, are looking at the accelerator as just a way to be really helpful in making the companies they want to invest in highly successful.
Yeah, cool.
So it's not that traditional 6% kind of scenario you're talking about, but it's also, you know, they're an investment. They want to invest in a company, and they want to make sure they can provide some of their expertise and access to mentors and the limited partners like Delta, Chick-fil-A, Cox Media, Coke, you know, that are all part of their LPs to really make it valuable to everyone.
Yeah. That's good. I'm actually talking to an Engage next week about something. So that's interesting to hear. Nice.
Are you talking to Blake or Tiago or?
Nicholas.
Nicholas. Yeah. Is our main contact. Yeah.
Okay.
Everyone's great. Yeah. Yeah.
We have I call him a champion, Igor of Prion, Igor Jablikov of Prion. I don't know if you've met Igor, but he's a customer of Founder Suite, and he's just like one of my favorite people because he's out there like doing my job, which is marketing and promotion for us. So,
Well, yeah, I so Igor and I actually have a funny relationship. I dare call it a relationship, but we have banter. I'll leave it at that.
Banter. That's great. All
We
right.
have heated banter.
Heated banter. You know, he's no shortage of opinions. He's always giving me feedback on our product. Very cool. Maybe what's the contrast the environment in the startup environment, startup and or funding environment in Memphis versus Atlanta, or just give some perspective on that. I think, you know, I don't know too much about either of those scenes. What are they like?
It's really interesting. Atlanta's very developed, you know, so there's a very, very deep tech, you know, community, startup community. It's in the water. Memphis is still developing that, and they've got companies like FedEx and ServiceMaster that are really fueling that and driving it. I think the city's starting to finally come around. Eric Matthews has been pretty instrumental in leading that charge as, you know, long as, gosh, over a decade now in Memphis. And so it's really picked up. But I think that the concourse, the Crosstown Concourse, which is a Sears Tower, just like Pond City Market, has also been a big, you know, thing that happened in the last couple of years. That's going to really, I think, put in an exclamation mark on the Memphis scene.
What is it? Can you? What is
it? It's called the Crosstown Concourse. Have you been to Atlanta's Pond City Market?
No.
So there are 10 old Sears towers across the U.S. I think it's 10. There may be more. And they've, you know, different cities have struggled with what do we do with these, revitalize them, whatever. And so they've come up, different cities have come up with some initiatives to turn them into sort of retail, dining, tech spaces, co-work spaces, and then with loft living as well. So that's where our office is in Memphis, is in the Concourse building. We're opening one in Ponce City as well. So it'll be basically twin offices in different cities because they're exactly the same layout. But it has helped in Memphis. It's really bringing a volume of tech people into one centralized space and giving it a focal point. Whereas, you know, before it was kind of disparate pools of tech folks.
Yeah,
I think it's starting to get density now.
Density, sure.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Interesting. All right. let me shift gears to a different topic. You know, you raise money from Golden Seeds and Jumpstart, which are both women-focused things. What advice would you give women founders for raising money, or maybe how do these entities work? How would you plug in with them? Yeah.
So I would say don't be afraid to put it out there, you know, that you're a woman in tech, and you know, making the ask is everything. If you don't ask, you don't get. There are a lot of different tech groups and VC groups that are very focused on gender investing and really wanting to do that, not as a not for show, but really wanting to open up the space and make sure that the talented women that are out there in tech get some funding, and that you know, that's not a you know, it's such a hard thing for women to get the funding. So I know there's a initiative to get to a certain percentage of women-led companies in the next couple of years and CEOs. And there, you know, if you do a little research, you're going to find out a lot of initiatives are going on, and that can help you be strategic about how you position yourself within that ecosystem.
Yeah. Okay. Great. All right. Well, I won't keep you too much longer, but, you know, what advice would you give yourself maybe on fundraising if you could go back in time and do the whole thing over again? Anything you would teach your younger self to avoid or to do better, differently?
One term sheet. Get it. No side letters. One term sheet. No side letters. That would be. Yeah. If you have the ability to, you know, try to get your commitments in before you start any paperwork with anyone, and just make, you know, you can get one, whether it's convertible note, or a safe, you know, whatever you're going to use, and just have that be what it is. You can end up spending a lot in legal costs if you're not careful, and get one letter that if somebody wants a side letter, you know, if you're going to do a side letter and you don't want to make it available to everyone, then set a tier of investment that it's going to be available to and cap it at that, so that you, you're not showing, seeming to give bias to any particular person, but you can just put a dollar, like, hey, if you want this, you're going to have to, you got to be above the tier of 200,000 or something like that.
So does that mean, yeah, you had, I think if PitchBook is accurate, you had 14 separate investors on that round. Did you have nine different term sheets and nine different kind of deals you had to wrangle together?
No, it wasn't that bad. But what it was is that we had people come in last minute, and we had closed the round. We were only raising 700,000, so we had closed it. But then there were some folks that were strategics that we just really didn't want to miss out getting to work with. So we opened it back up. But then, you know, that we had to make some addendums. You know, when you open the door to new people, you're opening the door last minute to last minute negotiation, which means addendums and rewrites, and then sending everyone to re-sign again. And I'm not dissing in any way. I'm thrilled that we were able to, you know, get funding, and very grateful. So I don't want to sound like I'm bemoaning it, but if I had it to do over again, I would try and get a soft circle list going early, and really vet them, talk to CEOs of other companies that those investors have worked with, and find out what their success rate is, how involved they are. If you don't want investors that are going to be super involved in your stuff, then don't go that way. If you want people who are really going to help you run the company, then look for those kind, and try to get it yourself locked on, you know, 5 to 10 at most, you know, and then square off with what, you know, what it is that are going to work for everyone in terms of terms.
Yep. I definitely think there's something to be said about a nice clean cap table. It reduces your headache later on for future deals. And yeah, I know the pain of the opposite. Good. Great. Well, any call to action, I guess, if people want to learn more, your URL is simply devcondetect.com. Is there anything in particular you want people to check out, or any call to action or plug you want to make?
Sure. And thank you. we offer a free audit for anyone who wants to check it out and just see it. If you're a media company, we also do a 30-day free trial. So if you want to take advantage of that, mention the podcast and we'll give you a 30-day free trial as well.
Okay. Cool. Great. And would that apply to people who have blogs, or are you really more talking about okay.
Sure. Yeah. As long as if you're monetizing your website through ads and you're making between, you know, at least 5 to 10,000 a month, then, you know, we're a potential solution for you.
Yeah.
Make sure you're not losing any of that. Yeah.
Good. All right. Well, thank you very much, Maggie. I appreciate it. And good luck completing both Techstars, Engage, and everything else going on. And we'll catch you after your next round. Sound good?
Yes. And thank you so much for having us. I appreciate it.
All right. Good luck. Bye.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye.